recorded on the 28th.
I'm sure I'm on the right track now.
We do this offense.
You still scared? Yes. Keep going.
Yes, I said so.
Yes, you think the same way as I do, Lucillus.
The world is yours by the instrument, though charged with psychic force, is not in itself necessarily a spiritual one. I do not blame the instrument or any individual particularly for this. It is one of those things which are unavoidable when so many come and so many bring vibrations which do not necessarily always clear quickly. Much remains, and many souls are attracted because of their knowledge of the communication that is possible there on that particular vibration which is near the earth. I understand only too well the need, of course, for this. The work of the medium has to be considered, but at the same time, that work that we are hoping and endeavoring to do is of a different order, and this room suggests to me the most likely condition for it. I know there has been some slight disappointment in regard to the instrument's visit to Pompeii, but this, in a sense, was perhaps to be expected, and yet I hoped for better things. But knowing as I well do the atmosphere which must prevail at times, which in a sense is not unsimilar or unlike the room which is used elsewhere for this work, with so many coming and so many going, so many conflicting thoughts and vibrations, it is difficult for the instrument possibly to realize and to be able to utilize his gifts in the way in which we particularly would desire them. So it was at Pompeii, though he sensed perhaps little, nevertheless, in spite of the conditions which were disturbing, I was able to draw in some measure nearer, and was able in certain respects at least to be able to draw on old memories and thoughts. So in this sense, it served a purpose. But in any case, apart from all this, we are pleased the opportunity was given, because we feel that from it shall come some benefit. And I know if one must think also on the lines of the medium's condition of health, it has been some help in that direction. But I am most concerned, particularly with our effort and our work here, that the revelation such as I may be able to give shall be as clear and as truthful as it is possible. But we must remember that many of these things of which we speak transpired centuries upon centuries ago, and though the memories may be dim, and we may try to revive many incidents and many experiences, it is not always possible to be always as accurate, perhaps, in certain details as one would desire. But we shall do our utmost, and we shall endeavour at all times to give you those things which we may feel will be of help and of guidance and of inspiration and of interest, and indeed at times of evidence that may possibly be that you can still, if you so desire, confirm. I would not have you think that because of the things I may say to you, which refer to us all, and which we know to be of truth, I would not have you think that I would expect always everything to be clearly understood, and in some instances we shall make effort to give you certain informations that you may well be able to confirm. There seems no reason why certain things should not so be. I know that at the moment certain things cannot be confirmed and must be taken purely on my word.
It must be very, very difficult for you.
If there is difficulty, child, it is not of your making.
No, I know.
It is of the conditions which cannot always be cleared. There are conditions which we must anticipate and endure. Indeed, we do anticipate these conditions. It is why we endeavor at all times to clear the atmosphere of these things which disturb. If you could but see yourself. Souls, many of whom have been associated in past lives. If you would see yourself illumined by the power that is so strong with love. If you would see the spirit, which is the real you, you would be amazed. I see you not at this moment as you appear unto yourself in reflection, but I see you as a young, vibrant soul, clothed in the garments as I knew you well in ancient times. For your choice of apparel is indeed artistic. I see you as I linger for this hour of time, and because my mind, my memory, is of this particular age of which we have spoken, I see you as I knew you then, young, slim, tall, graceful, with your hair most dark, done in ringlets high upon the head. The face is oval and the eyes are large. They are brown in color. Your forehead is high and your cheekbones also. The mouth is not small, but well formed. There is great dignity and great charm. And there is a great light that illumines the face. But it is of the mind that brings into the features the beauty. Your feet are encased in sandals, small and dainty. The robe that you wear is of palest blue, edged with silver, and gracefully draped on the form. And on your arms are several encircling bands, one of which is likened unto a snake. And the eyes of the snake glitter because they are of precious stones. And the formation which is entwined around your arm of this bracelet, it is made of some metal like unto silver. Around your waist is a silver girdle, and also around your neck is a coral serpent, and your hair is encircled with a silver band. This picture that I draw of you as you were and as I see you now, as my mind is in the past, is a picture that I wish were possible for you to possess. Your brother who stands beside you, he whom you have called by other names, is tall and well built, graceful agile and well built. Around his body is encircled a material which is jade green in color, thrown over the shoulder, hanging to the back, pinned by a brooch which is shaped in the head of a satyr. His hair is unusual for one of his time, for it is a rich color, copper. It is tightly drawn to the head and cut in a shape which is flattering to the face. The profile is strong and the nose prominent. The eyes are like unto your own in color. The forehead similar and high. The chin is strong and well molded. The color of the face is in itself like unto parchment, but a parchment that has seen much sun. The face is noble, that the hilt I see a dagger, but merely rather for ornament and protection, common to the men of the time which we speak. There is one earring in the ear on the left, which was a fashion among men of standing. This soul with whom you are so long entwined stands oftentimes beside you, but not always in the dress and apparel of which I now speak, but for my benefit assumes it, that I may give to you some picture to carry in your mind. He carries on his left hand, on his third finger, a ring with one large stone that burns brightly with color, red and embossed. It was a seal for which he would seal papers or letters. I see you both strolling together by a seashore, and I see you stop and sit upon the rock and gaze out to the sea, which is silver and reflecting the moon. And I hear in the distance music, but it is the music of another country. It is the music of Egypt. It is as if in this moment of time, both of you are conscious of a past existence, and I hear your voices, and I know that you are speaking of these things, of these mysteries which intrigue you both. And I see you sitting with your hands clasped, and I see that each of you are stilled and say for the moment nothing. And the music that you hear is the music of the past. And you are both in this moment of time conscious of this remembrance from long ago. And the music that you hear is the chant that once had been familiar centuries previously in the temples of Isis and Osiris. And as you sit by this seashore, you see approaching on the sands a man strangely garbed in robes strange to your vision. And as he draws near, your brother rises, thinking for the moment there may be some danger. But as the man approaches, automatically there comes a feeling of assurance and of peace and of tranquility again. And the man makes a sign, placing his hand upon his heart, upon his forehead, upon his lips, and bows before you. And he speaks your tongue, and he is a man of flesh. And he says unto you, though you know me not, yet have we been much together. I have for you a message of life. And he sits on the sand at your feet and speaks to you of Egypt, of Isis and Osiris. He speaks to you of yourself, of your past. And that music which you heard was coming from his mind, and you were receiving his thoughts in music, reawakening and making possible even the link between you before he'd even reach place where you were sitting. And it was so that first you came upon he whom we call Pharos, and you listened with great interest the things that he had to tell, the things of other ages and other times, of other ways of life and experience. And in eagerness you held to his words. And without perhaps even thinking too deeply, your brother invited him to the house. And yet it seemed the most natural thing to do. For here was one who was a stranger and yet not a stranger, one who had told you things that, strange though they seemed in themselves of truth. They revived and revitalized dimmed memories, and you began to feel that here there was one who could show you the path. So you departed into the house. This house that was set outside the walls of heaven. And through this link you began to pursue your interest in these truths. And so he was introduced by you and your brother to the house of the Betty, who had long been interested in all these things of the occult. You had attended previously services of religious nature in all the various temples, and you had been drawn and attracted, without fully realizing the reasons why, to the temple particularly of Isis. And gradually, through Pharos, you were shown, as it were, the psychic stream that had flowed through the centuries of time, when religions, called by various names, yet founded on the same truths, though they had become often changed by men's will and men's thoughts, yet the essence of truth remained. You had previously, to meeting fires, tried to find in many ways the truth of life and the reasons and the purpose, and you felt this link that was so strong between you, brother and sister. It was something that could only have happened through previous lives, for this love, this link between you, was more than brother and sister. It was more, even in a sense, than husband and wife. It was a unique blending of two spirits in oneness and complete harmony. And though there were certain physical and material aspects of your natures that were necessarily care to. You realized that whatever may have transpired in the past, or whatever may transpire in the future, whatever paths you may be called upon to tread, whatever vicissitudes you may have had to face, nothing could separate, nothing could come between you, nothing could alter that oneness of spirit. For here was a union of souls, which were like unto two halves, and when joined together, made the complete whole. Though, as I told you, you had no desires within yourself for marriage. Your life was one given over to your brother. Though he himself married, and there was a son, made no difference. If your brother had married many times, and if your brother had many children, still it would have been the same. There was no rift in the root, and the melody was perfect. Incarnations that you have had together, whatever the vicissitudes and the difficulties and the problems of the lives that you led, nothing ever came between you. You are now, as it were, on the brink of a great reunion. It is as if you have crossed a bridge, and the river of time has flowed for centuries underneath. And the bridge that has been built by love from both sides, the love that flows through all eternity has strengthened this bridge. When the time should come, when you have reached the other bank, the bridge should be destroyed, for there will be no returning, there will be no need for it. For through all this time, you have made possible your lives together in a oneness and a completeness. You must not doubt this.
Lucilla's, how beautifully you've spoken.
I think when man realizes the true happiness can only be found when he is prepared to give his all in true love, in true service. Can he ever hope to find that peace which his heart yearns for? I've told you previously that many of your lives have been lives of sacrifice and devotion. I've told you that you have willingly denied yourself material happiness with no thought of self or reward. In every one of your incarnations in which you come again and touch the life of this one soul who has in the past been to you so much in so many ways, always you have given freely and intensely of yourself. You have not considered yourself. And this is the love that is the perfect love. This is the love that frees love and makes it possible to truly become perfect love when man realizes that true love means to give oneself completely to another and at the same time expect nothing in return. Love is like unto something which is in itself invisible and yet felt. It is perhaps like unto the spirit which is invisible to the eyes of mortals and yet is felt with intensity by those whose hearts are open by love to receive. This of which I speak is such that in all these varying lives and incarnations, those of us who have been joined together, who have been much one to another, and oft times have suffered greatly materially and physically, yet whom we find through our suffering great joys and great satisfactions. Your brother in this incarnation of which I speak fully realized this love of yours. I do not think perhaps at the time he fully understood it. But at the same time, he knew that no matter who may come, as indeed eventually did come into his life, that any one person would mean the same to him as you yourself. He recognized in you a spirit that was more than the spirit of a sister, more than the spirit of a mother, more than the spirit of a father or of a wife. He knew that in you was himself, and that you reflected him also. When we talk of bodies, when we talk of individuals, when we talk of lives, we use terms which in themselves cannot depict or describe fully what one desires to convey. It is true that in the development and unfoldment of untold numbers of people, there must be many changes take place. There must be many aspects of the nature which are foreign in themselves to the spirit. And we must recognize that in any age and circumstance, no matter how desirous the spirit may be within man to express himself spiritually, there must be difficulties. There must be at times the giving over oneself in a material sense to certain physical demands of the flesh. One must fall in sometimes with the customs of a peoples of which one at that time may have belonged. That is why this period of which I speak, of ancient time, of Roman time, of Pompeii in itself particularly, there are certain aspects of life which seem perhaps foreign, or may seem to have little place with certain other things which are of a higher nature. But we must remember that in all life, in all the striving of the spirit to burst the bonds of the flesh, there are certain things which are beyond the power of the spirit. For the spirit, to some extent, must be confined to these things of the flesh. But what is important is not our failures, but our successes. And also to remember that sometimes even in the failures, we have learnt an important lesson. You have gone through great experiences. And I know you often say to yourself, over and over again, what is the purpose? What is the point of this present existence? So much has been lost. So much valuable time has been wasted. Opportunities which might have come your way were denied you. But this, strange though it may seem, is not as important as you may think. This present existence of yours has its purpose and its meaning and its place. And though you feel within yourself perhaps a useless existence. It is not self.